Hello and welcome to this podcast from Polity Books. My name is George Miller, and I'm very pleased to say that my guest today is Antonio Forcellino, whose biography of Michelangelo Buonarroti, entitled Michelangelo, A Tormented Life, was published in English for the first time earlier this year. Antonio is a restorer by profession and has worked up close on Michelangelo's sculptures, which gives him a privileged perspective on the achievement of an artist widely recognized as the finest ever to depict the human form. It was by any measure an extraordinary life. Michelangelo's wet nurse was part of a stonemason's family, so one of the first sounds the baby heard would have been that of the chisel. And he was still chiseling away with single-minded devotion at the age of 90. Decades before, at the age of 21, he had risen to the position of Rome's most eminent artist. By 37, he was a living legend, thanks to his work on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican. Other major contracts and monumental achievements would follow, but, as Forcellino describes, Michelangelo experienced these as a series of ordeals. And his private life had its demons too. His sexuality, his troubled relations with his family, his avarice, all contributed to the torment of an artist who Forcellino presents as quintessentially modern. I began by asking Antonio about Michelangelo's working methods, and in particular his extraordinary ability to visualize a sculpture in a block of marble even before he touched it with a chisel.
Yes, you know, the other sculptors have much timid and rational approach with the stone, with the marble, because they work very prudently. They step by step, they became close to the final shape. No, Michelangelo doesn't work like so. Michelangelo is aggressive from the first chisel he used. He filled the shape in the blocks, then he changed. But Michelangelo never delayed the epiphany of the shape, of the form. The first work of Michelangelo produced a shape. And that's why we love also the non finito, the unfinished.
So he was able to visualize the potential within the marble and then realize it without the stages that other artists had to go through.
Yes, he can visualize the potential, but in the different steps. You know, that's the greatest.
Yes.
Also, from when he starts, he visualizes also in a rock just attacked by the chisel, he visualizes the shape.
Let's go back to his birth. He was born to a Florentine family in 1474. What kind of family and what kind of milieu was he born into?
Oh, that's the big damnation of Michelangelo, because Michelangelo was born in a family, in a decayed family. The family of Michelangelo was two generations before, was a noble family, noble in the sense of the democratic Florence, was a rich merchant, and participated to the government of the city. So he is, for the Florentine of 13th, 14th, and until 16th century, this is the highest nobility. You know, is the noblest of the money, of the enterprise, of the strong value that produce wealth. But this family was a very decayed.
It was declining.
Yes, was very declining. And so Michelangelo feel all the bitter of this decline. The question became dramatic because this social class that Michelangelo was in is all declined because the Medici family is taking the absolute power, the tyrannic power, like Michelangelo felt. So it's a double decline. Yeah. The decline of the class and the decline of the family. So it produced the rage that followed Michelangelo all his life.
So this relationship with the family is one that goes all the way through the life. And the condition of exile is also important, isn't it, in his life? Because he spends a lot of his life in Rome and feels himself to be very Florentine. What was it which took him to Rome? What was he able to achieve in Rome that Florence couldn't offer him?
Michelangelo felt from the first moment he touched the Roman soil that Rome has something more than Florence, because Rome has the visual memory of the highest art. And you can see that the first sculpture he made in Rome changed totally his Gothic and nervous way of the sculpture before. The Bacchus is a sculpture that really felt this classicity of Rome. So Michelangelo was very stimulated by the presence in Rome. A few months after he arrived in Rome has been discovered the Laconte.
Lacon,
yes, and he looked this epiphany. He was there and he heard, come on, they are discovering some great sculpture, and he was eating and he left the dish on the table, and he follows the other artists. They went in this vigna on the Settesalian, from the ground there was this sculpture. And you can imagine that for Michelangelo, that was the challenge immediately. And the second question was that he felt after the Republican revolt, that Florence was fall down in the end of this tyranny.
You mentioned the statue of Laocoon being discovered, the classical antiquity literally coming out of the ground, and that provided a challenge for him and provided perhaps models for him to seek to better. And it's very interesting throughout the book the way in which classical antiquity is nourishing his art in the service, ostensibly, of Christianity.
Michelangelo is one of the artists that can accept this challenge, and he won this challenge because we know enough of the sculpture, but we never documented an artist so able in the technique like Michelangelo was.
I was fascinated by your chapter on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, because obviously that's a story which has many myths attached to it.
Yes.
But in fact, the reality is astonishing, isn't it? I mean, I really enjoyed the way you looked at really closely at the detail of how he worked each day, and how the humidity would change the porosity of the plaster and how the colours were applied. And that was fascinating. Was that one of the most interesting bits of the research for you?
Yes, of course. This is my work. When I'm restoring a fresco, the first thing I try to understand is how it's painted, if the color is sensitive to the water, so it means that was not well painted, or if the color is resistant. And what I see by my very close glance is the safety of a brush, the safety of a line, the contrast of the color. So it fascinated me. And in Sistine Chapel, really, out of any rhetoric, but is a miracle happened, because Michelangelo was not a painter. And in such a short time, he realized that miracle. Because for someone like I am, not a pure art historian, on one side, I can be admired of the idea, the drawing, but on the other side, it's unbelievable for me to understand how strong was the technique that he learned in so few time.
Yes.
And the technique was perfect. It's the highest technique ever made, and you still can see it 5 centuries later.
One thing we haven't talked about so far is money. Michelangelo clearly loved money. Money was very important to him. There are lots of contracts that he negotiated very firmly, and he was always trying to get as much money as possible. What do you think the importance of that money was? Was it something to do with his family status, trying to recover the status, or was it more personal?
I think it's something that has to do with sexuality. Michelangelo was what Freud probably would define an anal psychology, you know. He maintains everything. He has some problem to give. We see from what we know, he born the drawings. It has to do with the difficult to give. This is in general. In some way, he feared that if he start to give himself, he could die. He could lose control. So I think this fear to lose control is chained to this greed for money. That is not really greed, because Michelangelo was so involved in art creation that he never take care of luxury, of power. He made a very poor life because all he needed was art. And so he accumulated this money, but not in a clear sense. I think the page most beautiful I read on Michelangelo is the relation of the lawyer at his death. And when he say, "One small glass found it under the bed full of 10 Ducati. One small piece of velvet in the secretaire full of 200 Ducati." He put everywhere.
So he was hiding money all over the house.
Yes, all the house.
You mentioned sexuality, and I wondered how much can we say about that 500 years on? How much evidence is there to be able to come to any conclusion about Michelangelo's sexuality?
Oh, Michelangelo was homosexual. He was attracted only by male body, you can see from his art. And he really hated women. He never appreciated the women. The only gentle word that he wrote for a woman, Vittoria Colonna, and he say, "For me, was like a great friend, male friend." And we also know by many documents, some documents, that Michelangelo had lovers, but he also had probably gigolo. We know that he loved, he followed a very beautiful boy that but was an escort, because Cellini told us. But what we can see is that he always loved the wrong boy, because you know, homosexual was quite common in Italian Renaissance, and in Florence was very widespread. Was no scandal, but Michelangelo feared about this.
Antonio, the last thing I want to ask you about is the creation of the Michelangelo myth. And clearly that had begun in his lifetime, and clearly Michelangelo, by dictating his own biography, was helping to shape it and to direct it right from the beginning. I mean, that must have been a fascinating thing to investigate.
You know, maybe I'm not right person to talk about this, because the first reason for which I attempt to write this biography was my rage for the manipulation of Michelangelo. Michelangelo has been manipulated from the first day he was died, from the nephew, from the Medici, and then from the church, and then from Hollywood, at least, because the we know Michelangelo through the Agony and Ecstasy, and this was a great manipulation. But I love Michelangelo, and I think that he's a great man, and he don't need meat, because with his conflict, he's still great. I can love him just because such great talent was also suffering for the misery that I suffer too. So anyway, I start to write this biography, just distinguishing the document from the myth. We can see the question of a 900 was the homosexuality of Michelangelo. You know, everybody, first the nephew changed the poetry dedicated to women. And not to men. Then in 9th century, the manipulation was much subtle, and they say, no, but the love that taught Michelangelo is Platonic love, but anyway, it exists also a Platonic love for women, and Michelangelo never has also Platonic love for women. Now, the big and most important question is the religious censor. You know, Michelangelo has been proposed till now, just for the election of the last pope, the media of all the world send images of Michelangelo because he is a saint, like the hero of Catholic religion, Catholic faith. But that's absolutely faked, you know, because Michelangelo also leaves the Catholic faith with a great, great conflict. And for a while, he was very close to Luther and the group of heretics. But this is a story still too dark, still acting, because the Church, the Vatican, is the only monarchy still existing, and still they still have the document from which we could understand more, but everything is still closed, controlled. What I was very surprised that a new document has grown just 3 months ago, and he's a censor decretation of Pope Paolo IV, Paul IV, the big inquisitor. And this is a decree that prohibited in the 24th of August of 1556, so still living Michelangelo, the Pope prohibited the representation of Christ alive on the cross. But Christ alive on the cross was the most important creation of Michelangelo in the crucifix he painted for Tommaso Cavaliere, and in the drawing that you have here in at the British Museum. So you can imagine that on one side they need Michelangelo, that Michelangelo ended the Basilica of San Pietro because it was the big scandal of Christianity. And we know through the letter of the Pope's Paolo III Farnese that Michelangelo was the only man that could end this big work that was absolutely important for the propaganda of the Church. On the other side, the fate of Michelangelo was heretic, was too close to the Lutheran sensibility. And you know what happened? That the Christ alive of Michelangelo was engraved and disappeared, all these engraves, at the point that the art historian believed for 400 years that never has been engraved that composition of Michelangelo for Tommaso Cavalieri. But really, 2 months ago, I discovered in New York at the Metropolitan Museum one etching survived at this censor. So this is incredible. This is incredible. And this is the most, maybe the most developing field in which we have to discover about Michelangelo. You know, he's the artist much studied in art history, but also is the less known.
I was talking to Antonio Forcellino about his book, Michelangelo, A Tormented Life, which is available now. You'll find more details on the website at polity.co.uk. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and will join me again soon for another in-depth author interview. Until then, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.